This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Joy 94.9.
Freshly Dug Joycast.
And this is Doug Pollard bringing you our first anniversary Freshly Dug. We've been on air exactly 1 year today. And one person who must feel he's like been with us for almost all of that, although it's nowhere near as long, is our next guest, Daniel Whithouse, who's just been up in Townsville. Hello, Daniel.
Good morning, Doug, and happy anniversary.
Thank you very much. Now, we thought Mount Isa was a bit of a rough place, but it didn't turn out to be too bad. How's it gone down in Townsville?
Yeah, look, Townsville was a perfect example of a city that I visited where its reputation preceded it, and certainly people had told me to expect a kind of rough place that was dominated by, I guess, a couple of mines there, but particularly the biggest Defence Force base outside of Sydney.
Yeah.
And so what happened there was, I guess, what the locals were saying in terms of, you know, the conversations I had, was that Townsville has really taken a turn for the better in the last decade or so, particularly for gay and lesbian people, not so much for the transgender community from what they've reported, but certainly for gays and lesbians. They feel that Townsville has become a much more friendly and less hostile, environment, and let's say that's a good thing, because some of the stories I've heard,
I'm glad
that it's settled down.
Well, yes. reading through your blog, it does seem as though there have been some pretty rough times going down there. Slightly better for lesbians than for gay men, it would appear.
Yeah, look, there's a theme going around. I'm halfway through my tour, so I'm week 19 of 38 at the moment, and pretty much what I'm finding in all regional and rural places is that lesbians are finding it easier to, I guess, take part in communities. They're contributing in ways, and they tend to be more readily accepted than gay men. Gay men tend to have to kind of, be extra special in order to be kind of widely accepted in their communities. An example of that is, for example, being a doctor in a rural town or something like that. Whereas, men still sort of have this thing where they can't be seen to be a couple, whereas lesbians seem to be kind of walking around. And although not everybody's doing it, lesbian couples are saying they feel that they can show affection to one another in public. Whereas men are saying that that's just not a possibility for them.
Well, you've got if I recollect correctly, you've got a very strong overhang, as it were, many more men in Townsville, either permanently or temporary, than you have women, and therefore, particularly because a lot of them are working in industries like mining or they're in the military, you have the possibility for what I believe is called homosocial contact. In other words, men who are not necessarily gay or identify as gay, but having sex with one another.
I'm certainly you're right that similar to Mount Isa, but not as sort of extreme. But certainly, men are far outnumbering women in Townsville. And certainly, if I look at Townsville, in terms of the people, whether it was health professionals or whether it was locals, there seems to be a very big culture of men who have sex with men, but they're not necessarily identifying. And certainly, I think that the gay men that I spoke to were kind of saying it's harder to have a relationship in Townsville. It's there's this culture of you can kind of have sex with men, but not necessarily kind of call it gay or kind of think that it's gay and identify in that kind of way. So Townsville kind of has this strange kind of feeling where things seem possible, but in terms of kind of an organised kind of, at least gay community, it tends to be a little bit dispersed and, just a little bit more informal.
I was very interested in what you had to say on your blog about the gay scene there, the fact that there is only one gay hotel now, whereas in the past there used to be more, and you've got some interesting theories about that.
Yeah, look, there was about, there used to be about six or seven, gay hotspots spots about a decade ago, and people talk about how there were plenty of places to go, and that over the years people have kind of seen that become just one pub. And you know, as with any place, if there's only one kind of outlet, one venue, people can have some pretty strong opinions, and that can polarise a community. And certainly, the particular gay bar in Townsville does that. But what I was kind of reflecting on is you know, I've been doing this kind of international LGBT kind of education work and going to developing countries over the last couple of years, and international observers talk about how when you basically increase the opportunities for men to have sex with men and to kind of gather and meet, basically you see activist energy and kind of organized kind of, kind of gay kind of groups and things like that, you see them drop off dramatically. Mm. So it's thought that if you limit gay men in terms of their opportunities to kind of gather and have relationships and have sex, then basically you're going to have a lot of male energy going into kind of activism and organizing. And I've been thinking about that as I'm going around, and I wonder about places like Townsville where you know, people say, look, why don't we have all these gay bars anymore? Why is that? And I wonder if that kind of, has a relationship to the fact that people are saying there's much less hostility, and they feel that they can kind of go out to the community and be more themselves than they ever have before.
I don't know so much about that. I remember when I was growing up in London, and I was surrounded by a Lily Queens who would tell me how much better it was during the war, for example.
Yes.
When it was illegal and everything was strictly controlled, and they had the blackout, and you know, it was fun getting around all the restrictions, and they enjoyed the thrill of it, and that was all gone.
Yes.
So I'm a bit suspicious about that.
And I guess this is something that I'm kind of openly questioning, because even WA was saying that in Perth, at the kind of height of a lot of kind of draconian measures, that they were saying that there was a gay bar that was operating kind of like 20, 25 years ago, on one of the most infamous strips. And I just wonder about this strange relationship. And again, I don't have an answer for it myself, but I still think that there tends to be a very strange relationship between the two.
Mm,
and also people are saying things like online, gay social dating sites are also kind of leading to the demise of kind of these kinds of spots.
Yeah, I mean, that I could believe, because, it does take a certain amount of guts to walk down a street, walk into a bar. Somebody, there's always the fear that somebody might see you walk into that bar or see you walk out of that bar and think, he's one of those, and all that sort of stuff. Whereas if you can, it feels safer, although it often isn't, doing it from the comfort of your own computer. But, I mean, it doesn't sound as though it's that safe a place in Townsville anyway. I mean, the story you told about Rob, as you call him, the young gay man.
Yes.
I mean, that was a horrific story. Would you like to tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, look, I sat with a young man and heard a story, and basically what happened was Rob is a young tradesperson who is doing pretty well for himself in Townsville, and a number of years ago he was kind of working with a colleague. And this colleague happened to be gay, and they were at a particular unit block, and they were basically working, and Rob doesn't remember a lot about what happened, but he just remembers that he finished on the second day, and that he gathered that his kind of co-worker might have been camping it up a bit in the car park, as he called it. What happened then was they were set upon by a group of men who lived at the units. Those men decided that they didn't know whether Rob was gay, but they decided that he must have been gay by association,
mm-hmm.
and they started to beat them both up. And the story goes that there was a group of men chanting, "Kill the fags, kill the fags," and a woman ran down the stairs to see what was going on, and she brought down a baseball bat because she was so concerned about the kind of horrific violence that was happening to both of them. And Rob says to this day that he'd be dead if she didn't come down with a baseball bat.
Mm.
And Rob says this was the, I haven't checked this, but Rob says that was the first time that they've actually prosecuted someone under the kind of Queensland Hate Crime Acts. And obviously that has incredible ramifications for kind of Rob's life and him going through that legal process as well as kind of his friend who decided that, you know, this colleague who decided that he couldn't go through with it and he actually had to leave Townsville.
And then on top of that, somebody outed Rob to his family.
Absolutely. Rob was at home one day and came home one day from work, and his father said, "Someone called for you whilst you were out, and we need to talk." And then locked all the doors and sat him down and said, "Here's what they said." And basically, someone rang up and said, "You know, is Rob there?" And the father said, "No." And he said, "Well, can you tell him that he's the best F I've ever had?" basically, the father turned around and, you know, took all Rob's keys and took his car away, and basically for the next 5 months took him to work every day, made sure he came home, and basically watched him like a hawk, and until Rob had to move away to Melbourne for a lot of reasons, I guess. And I guess Rob's experience was really, really kind of, a tough one to hear. And certainly he's had a lot of challenges. But, you know, again, he's a story of someone who's moved back to Townsville and feels that he can live his life there and feels that, I mean, in terms of what he thinks that Townsville's improving and that he can kind of, you know, do his business there and get himself back on his feet. But he certainly, he recognises that that's going to still take a long time for him to get over a series of kind of traumas that he's experienced.
Yeah, and then they had the incident of a bomb being exploded outside the front of the local branch of the AIDS Council.
Yeah, this is a really interesting story, because if you talk to a whole range of people both in Townsville and outside of Townsville, there's different theories on what that might be about. But certainly what you kind of hear is that there was a bomb that exploded, and that people are not sure about who did that and why. But certainly it's led to the Queensland AIDS Council not having an office in Townsville anymore, despite the fact that, you know, like you would, I don't know, there's lots of reasons why they might have an office there, and certainly that was the bombing of that building, and also the fact that, you know, stories like Rob's and a few others that I heard, which were just, you know, horrific, that led to a group in the community deciding that they needed an anti-violence committee.
Yeah.
And so they formed that, and certainly they had some early wins on the board until their funding ran out, and they're still looking at what they can do to kind of get, you know, people thinking a bit more about this kind of violence, particularly homophobic violence, and they're trying to bring in some stuff around transphobia as well.
Yeah. Did you manage to talk to any schools while you were in Townsville?
No, it's a lead up to the holidays, and I didn't get a chance to talk to schools in Townsville. But what I did hear about was a group of people who had been going into the schools in recent years, and what they're saying is that it's pretty tough to get into schools. Usually they get the help of school nurses, so school nurses kind of fly the flag across the country, is what I find. And going into schools, what they find is that it's, you know, a very similar story to other parts of regional and rural Australia, in that the teachers, are often gobsmacked when they get a chance to kind of talk about these issues of sexual diversity for the first time.
Yeah.
And often it's a really, you know, it's a really powerful experience for them to be able to ask questions and to kind of think about the fact that, you know, particularly the things that they're saying to students actually might be, you know, hurting a bunch of students in ways that they never understood before. So certainly when people are getting into schools in Townsville, it's positive, but it's few and far between, and it's difficult to get into schools because, you know, they're cagey like the rest of Australia.
Yeah. So where's your next stop?
Well, I'm currently sitting in Brisbane, but what I will talk to you about next week is a fascinating story of going to a place called Mundubbera, where I met a gay doctor and his partner, and I heard the most extraordinary tale of how they were accepted into this community of less than 2,000 people. And I actually got to go down the local street and do a little bit of a vox pop and talk to all the locals and see how they reacted to the good doctor and his wife, as they tend to call him there. So, but as I said, I'm sitting in Brisbane at the moment. I've got a whole round of meetings and interviews to do, and I'm happy to say I'll chat about them very soon.
Okay, well, thanks for joining us again this morning, Daniel, and we'll speak to you again next week.
Dan, my pleasure, and get well soon.
I will, thanks. That's Daniel Whithouse there, reporting on his visit to Townsville, currently sitting in Brisbane. And as you say, as you heard, a good story coming up for us next week here on Freshly Dug.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.